This workshop was done with the C.G. Jung Society of Atlanta. Well, it looks like almost everyone is in their seat, and if I start talking, everyone else will soon be in their seat. So we have a day to talk about the self in dreams. And that excites me because if there's anything too a psychological idea, we're going to find it in our dreams. And if it isn't in our dreams, it isn't in the psyche. And so we're dealing with one of those many ideas that have bedeviled the world that have no substance. Now, Jung came up with a conception of the self, and he always claimed that he found the self by looking at the psyche. He didn't start with an idea of a self and then force the psyche to yield it up. So we're going to try to see if that accords with our own experience as well. And perhaps then rediscover the psyche for Jungian psychology, because unfortunately, once you develop a psychology, a set of ideas starts passing around. And so it's very sad to hear people say, well, I'm a woman and I guess I have an animus, so what am I supposed to do with that animus? You see, that's Jungianism. That's when you have a philosophy and then suddenly people are trying desperately to learn how to have psyches like Jungians are supposed to have psyches. That, of course, is not exactly what Jung meant. But that's what always happens when a dogma comes. And we have been in our field, as much as in any other field, troubled by a dogma. So a very large number of people read Jungian books to find out what they're supposed to be. And that, of course, is just not it. Presumably, you're already finding out things about yourself, and you read the books to find out a little more about people who've had similar experiences, may have solved some of the same problems. That would be a better way to read, but unfortunately, we all have this tendency to read with the superego, and to read from the basis of what we should think, what we should feel, and so a wonderful name of a book by Flaubert in the 19th century was The Dictionary of Accepted Ideas. So unfortunately, the self has become one of those accepted ideas. I realized that when I went to my dentist not long ago, and I had to call my answering service in the middle of my answering machine at this point, in the middle of the appointment, while I was waiting for the x-rays to be read, I had to check my, and so the secretary learned that I was a Jungian analyst, and she looked at me with a very confidential look, and she said, you know, it's amazing how few people know about the self. So we all know about the self. We've all heard the idea, but do we any longer know what it means? And have we lost its meaning to some transcendental meaning? So my hope for the day is just that we can figure out how to recognize the self for ourselves and see all of the different ways the word self makes sense of some aspects of our dream life and what our dream life tells us about what this mysterious center Jung calls the self is. Now, Jung is a hard act to follow. He had an extraordinary introverted intuition, I think. And he was able, with that capacity, to be a witness to the inner life, at a level that humankind has not seen very often. In addition, in my judgment, Jung had an unusually articulate, extroverted thinking that enabled him to describe his experiences in a way which many could follow, and he was able to develop a language for talking about his experiences that has pretty much held the fort, I would say, at this point in time. Jung's language is probably more familiar to people, more accessible to people, than Freud's language. I would say it's fair to say that there are more people in this country today who know what extrovert and introvert means than who know what id, ego, and superego means. And that was not to have been expected in 1920, but that is certainly what has happened by 2003. So we have a man who was witness to a remarkable inner life and a man who was able to tell us about it and create a language so that we could apply it to our own inner lives. And it doesn't always occur to us that not all of us are introverted intuitives with extroverted thinking. Who have this particular capacity that Jung had to both notice certain events in the psyche and talk about them in the way he did. So we have to both pay homage to what Jung gave us, but we also have to be able to move outside of it according to our own typology. Each of us has a different psychological type. And that means each of us has a different type of access to everything that we could call experience, including experience of the inner world and experience of the self. So if I start with Jung, I certainly am doing this to pay homage, but not to say this is the way it is or should be or even could be for everyone in this room. It certainly isn't the way I have experienced the self. I have a different typological bent than Jung. I have extroverted intuition, where Jung has introverted intuition, and I have introverted thinking, where Jung has extroverted thinking. So everything I do or say is some kind of compensation or complementarity or sometimes antagonism in some ways to what Jung has said. In other words, I fill it out from another angle. And some of you in the room don't have either intuition or thinking at all. You have feeling and sensation, or sensation and feeling. And for you, the description is going to be an entirely different thing. We're very much limited, also enabled by our typology to get not only different gifts, but different visions, different accesses. So I'm very grateful to Jung that he created the theory of psychological types, because it gives us a way to understand how differently we experience, notice, feel. In other words, how different our psychologies are from each other. One way to understand psychological types is that it's a psychology of psychologies. And so each of us who has a different type also has a different psychology. We all presumably have the same archetypes, but boy, do they get experienced differently, depending